Thank you so much for joining us for this week's message from Real Life Community, where we talk about connecting with God and others, growing in Christ-likeness, and sharing God's life with the world. My name is Sarah Comer, and I serve each week as Connections Pastor, making sure that you know that there is a God and a community that loves you and wants to go through the seasons of life with you. You can find us at reallifecommunity.org, and we would love to meet you on Facebook or Instagram. Until then, we hope this message meets you right where you are and helps you know just how deep the Father's love is for you.
Well, it is so good to be with you this morning. I love the opportunity to get up here and preach the Word of God. It's just a good thing. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there. You did a good job. We're all here. good job. Mom did most of the work. You know, it's kind of funny. You call mom for about everything else, everything. You know, money issues, you know, how do I do this? How do I do that? The only time you call dad is if your car breaks. So thank you, dads, for fixing cars. It's great. Well, I remember one Friday afternoon while I was still a college student, not very many moons ago, only like, I don't know how many times a moon cycles, I forget science class. My professor of church history, he asked us to come out to urban Nashville, you know, where all the skyscrapers and everything are at. And I'm getting a little feedback, if that's okay. Step back, I think I'm too close. Okay. And he told us to meet him at this kind of large architectural structure that we could kind of go on top of, and we could see all of urban Nashville. We could see the skyscrapers. We could see, like, the Bicentennial Mall, which is kind of like this parkish area with the farmer's market. We could see the roads. We could see the river. And we could see neighborhoods. And we could see all sorts of things. And the reason we were supposed to be up there is because we were having this kind of discussion. We were supposed to look upon all these buildings and all these things that we, our culture, have built, and point out what gods we worship. And I'm thinking to myself, why are we pointing out lowercase gods in our city? Because I'm going to Bible school. Like, I'm learning to worship the one God, the all-powerful God, and to learn his theologies and to learn preaching methods and to learn about his scripture. And we're about to sit here and talk about lowercase gods. But the idea, the assignment was to see what our culture used their time for. Essentially, we're pointing out what we used as a numbing or something to pass our time by that wasn't devoted to God, essentially. And so in college, I was never really one to ask questions, especially, or answer questions or ask questions, especially with this specific professor, Dr. Hoskins. Some of you might know him, very intimidating man. Scary. Anyways, and so I let some of the other students just, you know, offer their opinions. I had some opinions of my own, but the very first thing that was pointed out, and a lot of you will know that in Nashville, there's the Titan Stadium, the Nissan Stadium. Football. It is such a huge entertainment for our culture. In fact, we spend a lot of our week watching football when it's in season. And then on Sunday, it's so important because you have games all afternoon. And so typically you try to come to a church service and then you watch football for the rest of the day. It's what our culture does. And we don't just do it with football. We do it with all sports. We love watching sports. We love watching TV shows or movies. Some of us like playing video games. Entertainment is huge in our culture. It's something that takes up and consumes a lot of our time. And so then another thing that a student pointed out, he pointed out there are a ton of bank buildings, these huge skyscrapers that just have like a bank name on it. You could point out 5 to 10 of them. And money and revenue, super important to our culture. We'll almost do anything we can to get it because it is the way that we provide for ourselves. We get food, we get our water source, we get our shelter, we get our showers, everything. We get it by being able to purchase it with funds. In a way, you could almost say money makes the world go around, but not really. It keeps us sustained. It's our currency for keeping it sustained. It's so important. We sometimes put it above God because we'll work on a Sunday because we're low on funds. Another pointed out roads and how they're constantly busy and people are always going back and forth. And there seems to be a rush to always get to where you're going, but never to slow down and be with God. But in the distance, someone pointed out, if you look really hard, you could see a church building. And you could see a place of worship in Nashville, Nashville First Church of the Nazarene, all in that urban Nashville area. Just a large church when you're up to it. But from the point which we were at, surrounded by all the other things that we had built, looked so tiny. And so everything else blotted it out. And between all buildings, it didn't seem to be a priority. Our culture is so money and entertainment driven, it's insane. Right. And we're always worried about what TV show we're going to watch next, what video game we can buy, what's the next activity we're going to do, how are we going to pay for that activity, how are we going to make the money to pay for that activity, and at what cost do we pay to receive these things? So let's generalize what I'm talking about here, the entertainment and the money. Let's just generalize it to greed. Greed ultimately runs the culture of America. We want to be successful and have all the things that money can buy. And in fact, we will do anything it takes to get what we need for that money, or get the money, essentially. I work for the street department here in Murfreesboro. I'm a grunt worker. I'm at the low of the low. I'm a part-time worker. I work part-time here. I'm satisfied, don't get me wrong. But I don't make a whole lot of money just when, you know, I get a weed eater. That's all I do. Not a lot. And this position opened up at my work, and it's not something I can apply for because I'm not high enough on the food chain for it. I'm not a full-timer or anything like that. A leadership position to become a crew leader for Urban Environmental, which works on a lot of the nicer parts of our city. And it was interesting to see people grovel for the job, to go above and beyond to get what they wanted. One guy, we were all coming back at the end of the day, and at the end of the day, we typically sit around where we eat our lunch and wait until it's the time to clock out. They let us come back about 15 minutes before that. And one guy was just wiping down these tables. It's disgusting, but nobody ever wipes down these tables. It's absolutely gross. And he was wiping down these tables, and we all looked at each other, all the part-timers, we were like, someone's groveling for a job. But it's not only that. It's if someone is being lazy or isn't quite doing the job that they're supposed to do, you've got to be careful because people are watching, and they're so willing to snitch on you. And snitches get stitches, but they didn't care because in the end, in our culture, snitches don't get stitches because they end up getting the promotions. And so we all look at each other and we're like, man, we never snitch. The part-timers were like, close. It's we're not going to snitch on each other. You see, we read in the scriptures how disgusted God was with the people of Israel when they got greedy. They literally would start worshiping gods who were convenient to their desires. Yet when something rose up against them, another nation or a problem rose up, they were so quick to turn back to God and say, help us, please deliver us. Where are you, God? It was a vicious cycle that God eventually had to cut off with the exile. And he didn't abandon them in the exile or anything, but he had to stop this cycle of going back and forth of them worshiping other people's gods and then coming back to God whenever it was just most convenient. We'll actually be looking at a prophet that was pre-exile, before they were sent, or Babylon came in and destroyed Jerusalem and then brought them in to Babylon. And so we're actually in Micah this morning, and I'm going to start in Micah 3. Now, I'm not going to read Micah 3 because the main passage I'm going to will be actually Micah 4. but I want to bring out some ideas. This is kind of the pre, like, what the leaders of Israel are doing. They're not really doing what they're supposed to be doing. See, the leaders of Israel, they're supposed to be a blessing to other nations and a blessing to their very own people. They're supposed to know Torah and the lifestyle that God's law evokes inside of them. And so you hear some talk in this that they're supposed to know justice. They're supposed to know what's right and what's wrong, and they're supposed to act upon that. It's not just this knowledge thing. It's an actual action. You're supposed to live it out. And yet they weren't doing this. But instead, God says that they loved evil and hated the good, and that they were basically eating the flesh off of the bones of their people. Not literally, cannibalism was still frowned upon. But it was a metaphor that they were taking everything that they possibly could from their people to better their lifestyles. And that they were so willing to take up their swords and wage war to get whatever they wanted for their comforts, for what they considered what they needed and what they wanted. But then anytime a crisis would come up, sure enough, they would be like, God, where are you? Come help us. Come deliver us. And when the time came that the Babylonians would come and they would raise their city, God would hide his face from them. Let me tell you what this ultimately looks like in our culture. The people in our leadership look only to make more money. People seeking political and financial power promise things that are good for the lower class people. They say, I'm on your side. Vote for me and I will provide. Yet they provide nothing. Our leaders are caught up in scandals and in tweets. They constantly try to put each other down in order to gain votes. Our media, which is supposed to inform us with facts, only throws out false news and only tries to stir up our people with anger and frustration in order to receive more views. Our businessmen are only trying to produce products made of cheap materials and sell it for a very high price. And then since they're made out of these really cheap materials, they break so quickly and we have to go back and we have to buy more. Are you familiar with gentrification? So gentrification, it's this thing where wealthier people will buy up cheap land in an urban area and they will fix up these houses, or mostly it's houses that are in these areas. They'll fix up these houses and they'll shoot up the value of the property. And then what happens is the lower income people that are living in this area, their property value end up shooting up because that property's value shot up. So now the landowners are charging rent for the people that are living in these homes. They're shooting it through the roof. And so now these lower income people cannot afford their housing anymore. And so they have to move out and hope that they find something that's cheap again, or they become homeless. And these wealthy people, they don't care because they're making a pretty penny. They're making the money they want. The wealthy in our country kick the impoverished around, and sometimes we don't even know it. We constantly complain about being broke when we don't have to worry about what we are eating or drinking. We don't have to worry about where we lay our head, and we know we're going to have a shower. Yet, we drive up to a stoplight and see someone begging for money. And I'm not saying give them money. That's a different story. You might be feeding into something. But we can't even look them in the eyes because we feel so guilty about the situation that we're in. Maybe even we're feeling disgusted about the fact that they're homeless and we're thankful that we're not. And yet they're trapped in their poverty and they can't get out. And this is the kind of culture that we live in. You see, the thing is, my sermon isn't supposed to be a message of hopelessness. In fact, it's supposed to be hope. We sang about this morning of a God that's love is infinitely boundless. A God who delivers, who provides, who aids in the needs of his people that are crying out to him. And see, Micah picks up on that because he doesn't forget about the people that are being oppressed. He remembers them, even in exile. And he promises that he'll bring them out. And so now we're going to be in Micah chapter 4, where God promises a day that'll be good. In Micah chapter 4, verse 1, it says, "It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and it shall be lifted up above the hills, and people shall flow to it. And many nations shall come and say, Come, let us go up to the mountains of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." You see, this whole idea is that the leadership is now gone, the corrupt leadership. And now, instead of just establishing new leaders from the people of Israel, God has decided, I am now the leader. I am your king. I will take over. And so he establishes himself on the highest part, where a lot of times the kings will be, where the Israelite people were supposed to build the temple of God. It is now, he is on the highest spot. He is their leader. And the people will flood from all sorts of different nations, and they will go up to him, and they will learn his way of life. They will learn the correct way to live. His law will come out. And law is not something just to know, but it's something to follow and act upon. And so it continues. "And many nations shall come and say, Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between many peoples, and shall decide disputes for strong nations far away. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. And nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." And so now these tools of destruction that we use, tools we use for killing and taking over lands and taking and stealing from people like the previous leaders had done, we now turn these weapons and we turn them into tools that bring forth life, that we use to plow the fields, to plant seeds, to grow, and pruning hooks that cut off the bad branches that allow the good branches to produce good fruit. They're tools that create life. And we don't have to war anymore. We don't think about warring anymore, because now we are creators of life under our reigning God. But, in verse 4, "They shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. For the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken. For all the peoples walk, each in the name of its lowercase g God. But we will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever." See, this whole idea of sitting under your own fig tree and under your own vine, it's we all have what we need, and we don't need to take it from anybody else. We can have our rest and not have to worry about someone else taking from others, or for us worrying about what we have to take from others. We get rest, and no one is afraid. No one is afraid of what's going to be provided for them. No one is afraid of anything. And so there's this promise of deliverance given to the people of Israel, that no longer will there be rulers who oppress them. Rather, God will be the king of their nation. He will teach them how to live, to respect one another, and to live out the law he has given them. They won't take from one another, and they will all be provided for. They will no longer feel the need to go to war or to cause any destruction, and they will beat those very tools of destruction into tools that create life. They will peacefully sit under their vines and their fig trees, and nothing makes them afraid, because everyone is provided for and satisfied. No one will want what they have, because they all have what they need. This was the promise that the oppressed people were given. Now, a lot of you know that the end of this story, they're eventually brought into exile and then eventually delivered out of exile and return back to their homeland, and they're able to rebuild a little bit. But the thing is they still go into wars. Even today, the Israelite people are surrounded by nations that want what they have. And so we ask, you know, how does this apply to us? How does this relate to us? Because we haven't seen that time yet. But the thing is we know something that they don't know. See, this promise was given to the people well over 2,000 years ago. And you see, we know something that they don't. About 700 years after the message of Micah was given, a baby boy was born in a little town of Bethlehem. He was the king promised to these people to deliver them. And they thought that a king would rise up at their time, being oppressed by the Romans. They thought that this would mean a king would come with sword in hand and they would slaughter all the Roman people. But rather, this man who grew up from this little boy took on a much greater evil, sin, something that plagued all of humanity. Something that plagued all of humanity, and he died for it, showing that we could die to ourselves of sin, and then he resurrected to show that we could be born again into a new life. We no longer need to bring other people down for our own gain, because our gain is to help those that are in need. We sit and rest with one another because we no longer desire what others have, and they don't have to fear for us taking from them because we are satisfied in Jesus Christ. Yeah. So how do we get satisfied? Jesus has provided for us all the satisfaction that we need. He's offered it up with open arms. We just have to accept the gracious offer of his satisfaction and to turn away from the things that never satisfy us. The things that we buy into in our culture, the entertainment, the gluttony of having nice foods instead of that which just provides for us, the nice homes, but rather we're satisfied with what we have and we're thankful for it. Yeah. This is the promise of redemption. In conclusion, I want us to take a moment. If you would, bow your heads and close your eyes. Reflect upon your own lives. And it may be like what we've talked about, a life full of struggle to climb the ladder of success, to feel comfortable. And your hard work isn't in vain, but reflect on what it would look like to help provide for someone who is in more need. Think of those people who maybe you have passed by and thought about it, or even just didn't notice. For those who feel in need, reflect upon what it is that you need. Make sure it is a need and not a want, and then be willing to ask for it. Ask God. Ask the people around you. There are people who are willing to provide. Everyone, reflect on your need of God. We all need his grace and his guidance. Maybe your relationship with God is the biggest need that you have. Maybe you've been struggling against the waves of life and haven't spent time with your Savior. And pray that you need him and reflect upon what you can do to grow this relationship. Relationships aren't one-sided. You need to give your life as God takes it in. I'll give us a few moments. Now, allow me to give you a blessing. May the God who sees our needs, who knows our lives better than anyone, who is selfless and who is loving, go with you and provide for you. May he help you to see others in need and to help us turn away from our own greed. And may he be with you forever and always. Thank you, guys. You're dismissed.